Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Alpek's second quarter 2017 earnings conference call. With us this morning, we have from Alpek, Jose Valdez, CEO, Eduardo Escalante, CFO, and Hernan Lozano, IRO, who will discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you might have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's website, www.alpek.com. I will now hand the call over to Mr. Lozano. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you. Good morning and welcome. We very much appreciate everyone's participation today. This call will be divided into two parts. First, Mr. Valdez, our CEO, and Mr. Escalante, our CFO, will provide a general overview of Alpek's second quarter 2017 performance. Afterwards, we will have a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that the information discussed in today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to rely unduly on these forward-looking statements. Alpek undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Mr. Pepe Valdez.
Thank you, Hernan. Good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. Second quarter results were mixed. On the positive side, consolidated volume posted solid growth, and net debt decreased $118 million versus the previous quarter as a result of robust free cash flow generation. However, EBITDA was significantly below guidance due to subpar polyester segment performance amid a weak oil and feedstock price environment. June marked the lowest monthly price in the first half of the year for Brent crude oil and some of our main feedstocks. Moreover, paraxylene, propylene, and styrene prices decreased consistently month to month after the first quarter peak. This quarter's decline in oil and feedstock prices had an estimated impact of $39 million in consolidated EBITDA, which includes non-cash inventory losses and margin contraction due to feedstock cost carryover in both business segments. Polyester margins were also affected by the tight supply of IPA and CHDM. These two secondary feedstocks are used separately in PET to enhance its clarity and bottle-making productivity. In the case of IPA, prices have rallied, and while CHDM prices have not increased as much year to date, supply shortage has resulted in lower operating rates at one of our production lines. Incremental costs associated to secondary feedstocks have not been fully transferred to PET prices. In addition to the feedstock-related pressure on margins, we had a weak quarter in terms of our polyester segment's plant operations due to a combination of planned and non-planned outages at our larger sites in Mexico and the United States, which resulted in higher conversion and logistic costs. In contrast, our plastic and chemical segment, EBITDA, posted its second consecutive quarter above guidance despite high feedstock price volatility. Better than expected polypropylene margins and volume have been the main drivers this year to date. On the investment front, organic projects continue to move forward. An important milestone this quarter was the unscheduled start-up of our two propylene storage spheres with a total investment of $23 million and an aggregate capacity of 5,000 tons that will enhance our domestic propylene logistics chain and provide greater import flexibility. In addition, our Altamira power cogeneration plant is on track to begin operations before year-end 2018, and the EPS plant expansion should come online in the fourth quarter, a few months ahead of its scheduled start-up. The latest information we have from M&G is that construction work continues on the Corpus Christi PET plant. It is important to note that Alpek is not involved in the construction or start-up of this facility, we are an off-taker through our PET supply agreement. We will incorporate the expected benefits from our PET offtake volume once M&G concludes construction and we have more visibility on the start-up calendar. As you may recall, the Corpus Christi project was not included in our 2017 guidance. Regarding the potential acquisition in Brazil, I would like to highlight two important developments since our last call. The first, Alpek made an initial deposit of $38.5 million in escrow, and the second, Administrative Council for Economic Defense, or CADE, in Brazil started its evaluation process. It is our understanding this is typically a multi-month process. Closing is subject to CADE's approval, among other conditions. We will provide updates on any news related to this matter. We feel confident about our 2017 guidance, although we maintain a cautious view towards oil and feedstock price volatility. Alpek's consolidated EBITDA should return to guidance levels in the next quarters, as we expect our polyester segment to benefit from normalized plant operation, initiatives to transfer incremental secondary feedstock costs, and a more stable oil price environment. So far, in July, all of our polyester plants are running at normal rates. Reference Asia and PTA margins are on track to post their highest monthly level since 2015, and Brent crude reached $50 per barrel recently. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Eduardo, who will discuss our financial results.
Thank you, Pepe, and good morning, everyone. The decline in oil and feedstock prices was a significant headwind during the second quarter, in contrast with the positive price trends we observed in the beginning of the year. The average price of Brent crude oil went down to $47 per barrel in June. This is the lowest level year to date and well below the $55 per barrel estimation we use in our 2017 guidance. The average U.S. paraxylene and propylene contract prices decreased 7% and 13% respectively when compared with the first quarter. Typically, such a shift in the feedstock price environment creates a temporary distortion on volume and margins. However, on this occasion, the impact was concentrated on margins. We were pleased to see consolidated volume grow 5% versus the first quarter, driven by a 6% increase in polyester, even with this quarter's weak plant operations. Alpek's second quarter consolidated revenue was up 1% quarter-on-quarter and 6% year-on-year, as lower average consolidated prices were more than offset by volume growth. Nevertheless, the decrease in feedstock prices resulted in a $29 million non-cash inventory loss, plus an estimated $10 million impact from the momentary mismatch between end product sale price references and actual costs, which we refer to as feedstock cost carryover. Second quarter consolidated EBITDA was $82 million, including the negative oil-related effects and a $12.5 million one-time gain associated to last year's acquisition of a controlling interest in Selenis Canada. Adjusting for the $29 million non-cash inventory loss and the $12.5 million one-time gain, Alpek's second quarter 17 comparable EBITDA was $99 million. The $12.5 million one-time gain is relevant when evaluating results against our 2017 guidance, since this line item was included in Alpek's $502 million EBITDA estimate. Our full-year EBITDA guidance consisted of $129 million in the second quarter and $246 million year-to-date, including an estimated $7.5 million one-time gain from the Selenis acquisition. Alpek's comparable EBITDA plus the actual $12.5 million one-time gain was $112 million in the second quarter and $243 million year-to-date. On an accumulated basis, EBITDA is in line with guidance. However, second quarter EBITDA was 13% or $17 million below our estimates, as better-than-expected plastics and chemicals EBITDA was more than offset by certain events that affected the profitability of our polyester segment. Comparable second quarter polyester EBITDA was impacted by three main factors. First, regarding plant operations, we experienced higher conversion and logistics costs associated to longer than expected maintenance work, as well as unplanned outages at our Columbia, Altamira, Cosoleacaque, and Cooper River sites. Second, feedstock carryover. This effect is mostly captured in the Brent to Alpek EBITDA rule of thumb that we have mentioned in the past, and consists of an estimated $3 million effect on EBITDA for every $1 in annual average Brent price. Finally, third, secondary feedstock costs. As discussed in our previous call, the recent rally in IPA prices has been an additional source of pressure for PET margins. Tight supply will likely support relatively high prices in the foreseeable future. Hence, this incremental cost is being transferred to PET prices. On aggregate, these three factors had an estimated impact of $21 million in this quarter's comparable polyester EBITDA. The plastics and chemicals segment posted better than expected comparable EBITDA of $54 million. Polypropylene volume was resilient to high propylene price volatility, and reference PP margins remain approximately 1 cent per pound above Alpek's 17 cents per pound estimation. It is also important to note that caprolactam margins decreased to their expected level following the spike we observed in the first quarter. Year-to-date, comparable plastics and chemicals EBITDA is $17 million ahead of guidance. We maintain our full-year EBITDA guidance of $502 million, although results have varied by business segment. We also acknowledge that the Brent crude price and the Mexican peso exchange rate are two macro variables that have moved away from their expected level. Moving down on the P&L, Alpek's second quarter consolidated majority net income was $25 million, down 49% year-on-year due to lower operating income. Year-to-date, consolidated majority net income was $112 million, 7% lower than the same period in 2016, as this year's non-cash foreign exchange gain and lower income tax were more than offset by the decrease in operating income. Regarding our balance sheet and certain cash flow items, net debt was $1.058 billion, up 16% year over year and 10% lower versus the first quarter. On an absolute basis, net debt decreased $118 million year-to-date as a result of positive net working capital cash flow. Initiatives to reduce net working capital across our businesses and lower feedstock prices contributed to this quarter's positive cash flow. Moreover, Polyester plant outages cause a higher inventory drawdown. Second quarter CapEx of $65 million reflected the ongoing development of strategic projects. Year to date, CapEx reached $142 million, with the Altamira Cogeneration Project accounting for more than 60% of this amount. I would like to wrap up the call with a quick update on the current process to monetize at least a portion of our power cogeneration assets in Mexico. We view this initiative as an alternative to obtain funding for the Brazilian acquisition and as a catalyst to unlock shareholder value at the Alpek level. The formal sale process is being conducted in coordination with our financial advisor. We concluded the first phase as planned and are now engaged in a final due diligence with selected investors to reach a potential agreement in the coming months. We will provide updates on any news related to this matter. This concludes my remarks, and now I would like to return the call to Pepe, as he would like to give you some color regarding our expectations for the second half of 17 and our guidance. Pepe.
Thank you, Eduardo. And before we go into the Q&A session, I just wanted to complement a little bit of what Eduardo mentioned about us maintaining the guidance for 2017. This is something we have analyzed in detail. This is not something we did without really looking into the expected results in the next months. And I would like to share with you some of the factors or the reasons or the assumptions why we are maintaining our guidance. First, in spite of the terrible quarter that we just experienced, we have to keep in mind that our year-to-date results in terms of EBITDA are $243 million, which compare to $246 million expected under the guidance. So in reality, the difference versus guidance is basically 1%. So we are very close to guidance in spite of the difficult quarter. And this is to a great extent explained by the fact that we were very much ahead of guidance in first quarter. So again, some of you ask us, why don't you increase your guidance after your first quarter result? And the reason we did not increase our guidance is because we, and I think we mentioned in the last call, that we were expecting some headwinds in particular regarding the prices of crude oil and our raw materials. So again, we are starting basically from guidance. What challenges and opportunities we see for the remainder of the year. Really, the biggest challenge we're facing today relates to PET margin. We, again, mentioned that at the beginning of the year. It was of the important changes versus last year. PET margins have deteriorated drastically in North America, mostly as a result of imports. Imports have increased significantly in NAFTA, and particularly in the U.S., and today they represent more than 15% of the market. And they have continued to increase like 5% in 2017. Again, we have talked about margins in Asia being very low for the last 4 years, since 2012. They remain very low. And we are, in our guidance, we are not assuming an improvement in the margins in Asia. So this is a very important assumption. We are not assuming that the margins in Asia are going to improve over the next 6 months. In our guidance as well, we are assuming that the crude oil prices, particularly Brent, is going to be in the 50 to 52 range, actually. I think earlier today, when I saw it, it's 51. We believe that the crude oil price will remain in these levels. If anything, I believe that it might be a little bit of opportunity of crude oil prices going up further, as we have seen the recent drawdowns in inventories in the globally, but in particular in the U.S. So we're assuming again prices of Brent remain where they are. We are not assuming improvement in Asian prices. And again, then in terms of the PET margins, the biggest challenge we have, let's say short term, is how can we increase our prices to compensate for the price increases in IPA and CHDM. And in this, we have already undertaking a process to talk to each and every one of our customers and explain to them the situation and try to convince them to accept price increases. I would say so far we have certainly have some success, but still a lot of work pending to be where we want to be. So that would be, I would say, going forward, the biggest negative difference that we see versus our original guidance. Lower margins in PET as a result of this IPA, CHDM situations. That's the, I would say, the most negative impact. In terms of our plant operations, as we discussed before, we have a very difficult second quarter, but as we speak, the plants are operating in a normal way, and we are very hopeful that we will have a very good second half of the year. So we don't see a problem there. So we don't see a significant problem in the inventory revaluation. We don't see problem with the plant operations. So the biggest challenge, the biggest risk for our guidance right now is this IPA situation. But on the other hand, I will share with you also that we are somewhat, let's say, optimistic or confident that margins in some of our other business are going to perform better than guidance. And one of the examples being polypropylene resin. Polypropylene resin, we believe prices of propylene are going to reduce a little bit in the perhaps next couple of months, but we also expect that we will not have to reduce polypropylene prices. So this reduction in monomer prices will very likely result in a margin increase that, as I said, was not contemplated in guidance. So we do see an upside in terms of polypropylene margins for the second half of the year. In terms of caprolactam, well, we mentioned we had a very good margins in first quarter, and then margins came back to normal second quarter. But again, in July, we are seeing more than a 10% improvement in margins so far. So we're also hopeful that this margin improvement in caprolactam will stay with us for the remainder of the year. And so that's another upside, higher than expected caprolactam margins. And also an important upside for us is in terms of the margins of our cogeneration facility. In Cosolecaque, we are experiencing now margins that are approximately also 10% higher than our guidance. So that is also an opportunity for us to compensate the IPA situation. And finally, I will say, the wild card is what's going to happen with margins in Asia. As I mentioned before, we are assuming in guidance we have margins as the last 4 years, but this year we are seeing a significant improvement. If this were to be maintained, then that would be, of course, another opportunity for us to perform or to have better results than in guidance. So I do believe that while we do have some risk in meeting our guidance, I would even say that the opportunities will probably at this stage, in my opinion, will outweigh the risk. And we'll see how it goes. And of course, we will be reporting as we find any important new development. But again, I thought it was important to make sort of this explanation. It might help a lot in the questions to come. And after this, I would, operator, ask you to please instruct the participants on how to place the questions.
Yes, thank you. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, please press star 1 if you'd like to ask a question. We'll take our first question from Nikolai Lippmann.
And good morning, everyone. Thanks for the call and for taking my questions. In light of the price fall in the polyester segment, can you comment a bit on whether this is isolated in the PET area or whether you see a risk that this could spread into PTA in North America specifically as we see additional capacity come in that space over the course of the next year and a half? Also, can you comment on any initiatives that you're taking to end this price war through anti-dumping or any other measures? And then finally, could you remind us of the expected start of Corpus Christi 1 and 2? What are the key milestones in terms of and penalties if we have further delays? And how should we think about your $90 million receivable there? Those are the questions. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well, first of all, I will say that PTA margins have been very steady over the last months, and to be honest, I do not see any pressure in margins over the next months. In particular, with the situation that, as I mentioned before, we are seeing in Asia, where margins of PTA have increased. I would say, almost 20-30% in the last month. So if that is sustained, I don't see an issue with PTA prices, in the short term. And after PTA start off in Corpus, I don't know. I mean, the thing is, PTA from Corpus is not going to be sold into the open market. It's not going to be traded in the market. So I don't think it will necessarily have an impact in the market. I think, the biggest concern going forward is the margins on the PET. And I think your other question relates or helps me answer your question regarding PTA margins. I think, in reality, the biggest issue that we're facing in North America is, as you say, the dumping of PET from Asia in particular, Asia and Brazil, I would say. As an industry, we are working, of course, to analyzing or trying to gather the information to make an anti-dumping case. And so far, the only thing I could share with you is that we do believe that it's very clear that some unfair trade practices have been taking place in the imports of PET. In many cases, or in most of cases, the producers are selling below their cost. And not only below the cost, below the cash cost, and in some cases, below the variable cost. So that's one of the reasons, as you know, that is typically considered as a dumping. So we do believe that based on the information that is being gathered by industry, we do believe that there is a very strong case to file a dumping against certain producers in North America. So for sure that's going to be before the PTA plant start up perhaps at the end of next year, and then of course that would probably help in maintaining PTA margins in North America or in the U.S. Let me now go to your question regarding Corpus. Also let me add something else is regarding PET, PTA in Asia. We do also have information that a lot of this, and some of this information is becoming public, that a lot of the PTA producers in Asia, in particular in China, are losing money, in a significant amount of money, and they have been losing money for quite some time. So I do believe also that will support the potential anti-dumping case. When we go to your questions with regards to Corpus, the M&G has decided that they want to start the plant in two, as you mentioned, I think you mentioned one and two. Well, they're going to start the PET plant first and then PTA. right now they're concentrating on the start of PET. The latest information we have received from them is that the start-up is estimated for October. And again, as we mentioned, in our case, we have not included any. We have not included the start-up of that plant in our guidance for 2017. And we will wait a couple of months, two, three more months, and decide when we will consider the start-up for next year. But it, for sure, it's not included in the 2017 guidance. And PTA, the information we also have from M&G is that the estimated start-up time will be end of next year. So those are the that's information that we have. They continue to work in the plant, and you know that's where they are. You were asking with regards to our guarantees. Well, we do have some the penalties for delay. We do have some what we call liquidated damages included in our agreement, and they will probably start to kick off starting next year. That will be it for that.
Well, thank you very much, Pepe.
You're welcome, Nicolai.
And we'll take our next question from Vincent Falange with Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon, Pepe, Eduardo, Hernan. Very quickly back to the raw material issue. I know you provide a lot of information on that already, but based on negotiations, do you think we will be able to see a pass-through of IPA to PET prices already in 2017, or this is something to expect more towards next year? And then my second question, you mentioned again that Alpek is searching for potentially a minority partner in Swappy. How is that advancing, and when could we possibly have news on that? My guess is that we would probably have to wait for the CADI approval. Thank you.
Look, with regards to the pass-through of IPA, we believe we will be successful to a significant extent in this year. For sure, into next year, I think we also we will be then able, hopefully by next year, the situation improves with the IPA pricing, and it will not be as critical. But yeah, we're negotiating with our customers to increase the price for as early as this year, and again for next year, we'll have to see how the situation is, because as I say, it might be that IPA prices come down and it will not be as critical. But yeah, we are not waiting for next year. We are working to get the increases this year. And as I mentioned, we have had a certain degree of success already. In terms of minority partners in PQS, we are not considering that, to be honest. And we are even prevented from doing that in the agreement in the contract we have with Petrobras.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Vincent.
Again, that is star one if you'd like to queue for a question. And we'll go to our next one from Vanessa Quiroga from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yes, and thank you. Hello, Pepe, Eduardo, Hernan. How are you? I have a question regarding the margins. Well, the prices of the IPA. I was wondering if you can give us a sense of how much they have increased as a percentage of the total cost that they represent for your production.
Normally, IPA is a small portion of our cost of producing PET because it's used in a very small amount in the PET formulations. But the price increase in IPA has been they have almost doubled the price. So the price has increased 100%. So even if it's a small component of the formula, when you increase it 100%, it has a significant impact. And we are talking the impact, it will be, I don't know, it will be like a cent per pound, a little bit more than that, a cent per pound, which is a lot. It's $20 per ton, which is obviously very significant, and that's why we cannot absorb that anymore.
Yes, that's very helpful, Pepe. And how are the negotiations going with your customers? Has anyone accepted the pass-through of those prices, or under what terms? More or less, how is that going?
Oh no, we have been successful with several customers, in having the pass-through, and even more important, remember that we sell a lot of product based on market indexes. And the most important consultants have already increased prices as a result of that. So that should also facilitate, having this increase going forward. We do have some issues in cases where we have, I think we talk about that with customers where we have accepted fixed pricing. Okay, there are some cases where we lock in fixed prices for 3 months or whatever. And then, of course, in some cases, in 6 months, in those cases, it's where we are having a little bit of a challenge to convince them to accept this price increase. So that would be, I would say, where we are facing more difficulties. But with other customers, we have been able to increase the prices to compensate for this IPA increase.
Okay, Pepe. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Felipe Santos from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hey, Pepe. Good morning. Two follow-ups. The first one, considering this situation on prices, just to make sure that I understood, you're trying to pass some price increase to the customers, but so far you have found some difficulties to do so. The expectations that you could do this would be mostly for next year.
No, Philippe, it's not what I tried to say. No, what I'm saying is we are having a success with many customers, but not with all the customers.
Ah, okay. Got it. Thanks so much. The second question is, can you elaborate a little bit more on the net working capital gain that you had this quarter and the expectations that you have for the company's cash flow, the potential sale of the assets, the acquisition of the swap, the whole expectation for the free cash flow and the possible dividends, payments. Remember the past that the company would be analyzing this too. Can you just elaborate a little bit on those aspects?
Look, we still see opportunities to improve our cash flow. I mean, our cash flow or with net working capital, if you wish, we are still looking for ways to improve that. So I will say that unless crude oil prices were to go up significantly, we should be able to maintain or continue to reduce working capital and to generate a significant cash flow from operations. That's number one. With regards to your question of dividends, we don't have any issue or any problem. We're going to pay dividends as was determined. In terms of SWAPE, I think I mentioned we just started the filing process with CADE, and we understand from what we talked there that this time that need to analyze the situation will be somewhere between 6 and 10 months or 11 months. So most likely this deal will be closing on the second quarter next year. And again, for us at that time, we will certainly hope, our cash flow generation from now to then, and we'll make it, so less of an issue. In the meantime, Eduardo mentioned about cogeneration. We are proceeding with analyzing the different offers that we have received. And of course, if we can do that, that will be a significant also, let's say, improvement in terms of the debt that we will have to raise for the acquisition of SWAPE.
Okay, this is great.
Those fronts, we believe we're in good shape.
Hi, Philip. This is Eduardo. Let me just compliment what Pepe just told you. Regarding dividends and the other alternatives that we are looking at, like the monetization of our cogeneration assets, we are looking at those in order to be able to fund the Brazilian acquisition without increasing our leverage at Alpek. So at this time, as we mentioned in the script regarding cogeneration and dividends, we do not have any news to share with you. However, we expect as these two initiatives move along, we expect to have news relatively soon, and then we'll be in a position to share them with you.
Okay. Thanks so much. This is really helpful.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Andre Hashem with ITAU. Please go ahead.
Hello, guys. Thank you for the question. I have two questions, actually. The first one, can you give us some more granularity on what were the reasons for the planned and unplanned stoppages? What happened? Was it a supply issue? And what's going on that front? The second question is regarding the EBITDA guidance. In the fourth quarter, you guys guided for around $198 million in the plastic and chemical division and around $300 million in the polyester division. Should we consider that this has now shifted and we should have a larger contribution from the plasticals and chemicals division and a smaller one from the polyester division? Or should we still assume the same mix and it'd be that? Thank you.
First of all, in terms of the plant outages, most of them were scheduled plant outages, but some of them just took longer than expected. We had to shut down two of our PET lines in Colombia, very large PET lines, and we had to do some extra maintenance that you have to perform every 10 years. So we had to do some of these maintenance that we have to go over that is done every 10 years took longer than we expected. To be honest, we were not expecting it would take so much time. And then these outages were extended in a significant 15 days or something like that. And this was not part of what we have considered in the guidance. So that's part of that's an important part, I would say, of the increasing cost and logistic cost and all of those issues. On the other hand, we did have two unexpected shutdowns due to electrical to power supply in our plant in the south of Mexico, our PTA plant in the south, Cosulacaque plant. We had two unplanned shutdowns, one in May and the other one in June, and that also created some issues for us. So that's mostly what we are referring to in terms of the shutdowns. The Altamira and Cooper River plant shutdowns, those were scheduled shutdowns. I mean, of course, they also have an impact, but there was nothing out of the ordinary. So, and again, I mean, the good news is our plants are now back in operation. We they're operating very, very well. Normally, after the plants operate better, better yields, they have more throughput, etc. So the plants are now in very good shape, and we don't expect any major shutdown from now to the beginning to the end of the year. So, and again, that was a significant drag in our results in the second quarter. The impact of those extension and unexpected outages was $12 million. If you take that out, all of the variation we had was pretty much related to the crude oil price and inventory revaluation.
Okay. Hi, Andre, this is Eduardo. And regarding your second question about the guidance for polyester and plastics and chemicals, as we mentioned before, year to date, we are very close to guidance at Alpek level. However, when you look at the two different business segments, polyester is about $20 million below our guidance, and that has been compensated by plastics and chemicals. So going forward, even though we do expect to have a recovery of the in the polyester business, as Pepe has mentioned before, we do see a little bit of shift for the guidance for the whole year in each one of the business segments, with plastics and chemicals being a little higher and polyester being a little lower than what we anticipate.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Luis Carvalho with UBS.
Hi, Pepe. Hi, Eduardo, Hernan. Just two questions here. I would like to take the opportunity that Pepe and Eduardo are on the call and not to, I'd say, get into much more details about the results itself, but to understand a bit more about the strategy and looking a bit more broader view. You just made an acquisition in Brazil, Suape, which you mentioned that is going to be likely to be approved by second quarter next year. There's also asset sales going on through the city car generation plants. You net that to EBITDA during the quarter, close to 2x. So how should we think about, you'd say, the strategy looking forward, I'd say 12 to 18 months, assuming that, I mean, the company will deliver the guidance for 2017 EBITDA. Should we think about further divestments, or should we think about, I don't know, further acquisitions? Are you looking, for example, to Braskem in Brazil, and how do you say the leverage will be, let's say, aligned with all of that? The second question, it's a bit more specific. I'm not sure if I lost that during the call, but when do you expect to have any, I'd say, a bit more news about the cogeneration plant sale? It's something that you expect to see during the second half this year, or something only for 2018? Thank you.
Let me start answering your last question. The cogeneration sale is something that will be decided this year. We don't believe it's going to drag until next year. No, I think that's going to be decided this year, for sure. And in terms of a Braskem acquisition, well, I mean, we would love to do that, but at this point, I mean, we are really, I mean, it's a very big ticket for us. So it's a great company. We would love to look at it, but I don't see that within our strategic plans today. Eduardo will answer the other question of EBITDA.
Hi, Luis. Regarding leverage, what we anticipate is before the PQS acquisition and before the monetization of the cogen assets, we expect to be by the end of this year around 2.0 times net debt to EBITDA. We anticipate we'll be able to fund most of the Brazilian acquisition with the sale of at least part of our cogeneration assets. So we do not expect to see our net leverage to increase from this acquisition. As we have mentioned before, we are very committed to maintaining Alpek investment grade. We'll continue looking at maintaining a very strong balance sheet.
Okay, clear. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Gabriela Benjamin from Newfoundland. Please go ahead.
Hi, yes. My question is in the supply of propylene. First of all, I think you guys had a slightly better volume in the second Q, and I was just wondering if Pemex has finally stabilized or started increasing again its supply of propylene. And my second question also relates to that. I know there's a contract that was signed in 2007 that expires at some point next year with Pemex for the supply of the propylene. If you could speak how negotiations are going with that, if you plan on renewing it, and if there will be any implications on the supply.
Well, Gabriel, this is a good question. I mean, Supply of polypropylene has been a big issue for us this first half of the year. Pemex has been underperforming significantly. They've had a lot of operational issues in the refineries, and yes, it's a source of major concern for us. And they were, you know, they had improved, you know, well, not significantly, but they had improved somewhat in May and June, and the supply of propylene. But then in July, I don't know if you're familiar, but they have an explosion in Salina Cruz, and that has certainly created some issues for us in July. We hope this explosion, is going to be normalized. The operation of Salina Cruz is going to be normalized very soon, and hopefully then we will go back to the positive trend that we have over the last months. But yes, it's an issue for us, the supply of propylene, in light of the operational problems that Pemex has experienced in the refineries in the last months. So again, hopefully they will resolve this Salina Cruz issue soon, and we'll get back to a more positive trend. In terms of the contract expires end of next year. Yes, and I do believe perhaps we will be looking for an extension of the contract. And from our side, that would, you know, that would be a good result, extending the contract.
Great, thank you.
And we'll take our next question from Christian Lundy with Scotiabank. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for the call. Well, I don't know if you guys can discuss this because of the deal that is going on for the monetization of the Cogen assets, but what portion approximately of these assets are you expecting to monetize? Is it fair to consider around 40 to 50%? Thank you.
Look, we are at this stage really not establishing a limit, and now we're looking at all the possibilities. But yes, it's possible that we don't have to sell it all. We don't have to sell both plants in particular, and it was going to depend in the negotiation with the interested parties. But my expectation is that we will retain a portion of the assets, and we will continue probably to manage the plants.
And we'll take our next question from Guillermo Diego with Santander. Please go ahead. And caller, your line is open with Guillermo Diego. Please go ahead.
Sure. Hello. Just on the cogeneration assets, I think Cosolacaque currently contributes with over 30 million EBITDA, right? While Altamira is expected to generate around 90 million. So considering the market value for those assets, that would suggest a value between 300 million or something over a billion, right? So that's a range between 7 and 30% of the enterprise value, current enterprise value. So when you are saying you're just looking the monetization to match Brazil capital requirements, does that mean Altamira is out of the table, or is it in the due diligence process too?
No, I think we explained this in the last meeting. I mean, the idea is, on the one hand, of course, it's important to, we don't want to be over leveraged. We want to maintain our investment grade, and that's part of the reason of looking at this possibility. But of course, the main or the driving force is the fact that we believe this asset could probably capture a higher value than what they are valued today by the market. Our multiple as Alpek is lower than the typical multiple of this type of operations. And so in reality, we want to do both. And if we don't have a good value, we will most likely decide not to go ahead and keep those assets.
Okay, so currently both assets are in the due diligence process. You haven't decided if
they're both
discarded or not.
They are both.
All right.
We just to give you a little bit more color, Guillermo. I mean, we do believe that the Coso Lecaque asset, in a way, is more the risk than the Altamira asset because, you know, it's already in operation. As you say, it has already established EBITDA. So we'll have to see. We believe we probably get a higher multiple for that asset than for the Altamira asset, which still has some execution risk, if you wish. And that's why we have said that most likely will be Coso Lecaque, the one we're going to sell. But we wanted to open to analyze all the opportunities.
All right. Thanks.
Welcome.
And again, that is star one if you'd like to queue for a question. And we'll take our next one from Pedro Medeiros with Citi. Please go ahead.
Good morning, Pepe and Eduardo. Thank you for taking the question. These are actually two questions. The first one is regarding your operations already in the third quarter. Based on your previous comments around public supply, can you give some additional color on the expected performance of plastics and chemicals? And how do you see the margin trending for the business given the outlook of starting significant new propylene capacity in the U.S. in the upcoming months? And the second question is, based on the discussion in this call, there has been greater fluctuation in PTA and PET margins as we have seen in different markets. Can you comment on how has the results from petrochemical swap been impacted by these fluctuations? And since based on your guidance that the settlement should be around the second quarter of 2018, do you mind on commenting how the contract with Petrobras works and whether you have any provisions to change the acquisition price on the back of the facility results throughout the meantime?
Okay. Again, let me answer your second question first. No. In the agreement with Petrobras, there is no change in price. I mean, there is only an exit clause if there is a material adverse effect. Okay, so if there is a material adverse effect, we have the right of exiting the deal, but there is not a problem with changing or renegotiating prices. You know, that would take a long time. It took a long time to begin with, so there is the price is fixed in the PQS operation. Okay. And then you mentioned about the third quarter operations in plastics and chemicals. As I mentioned before, the management of Pemex is very much committed to improving the efficiency of their refineries. They have been performing on the last months at very low levels. They have a very specific plan to take the utilization of refineries from, I don't know, every 600,000-700,000 barrels per day. They have a plan to take it to the 1.2 million tons. 1.2 million barrels per day in the beginning of next year. Gradually, and I would say they were doing reasonably well until this explosion happened in Salina Cruz, a couple of weeks back. So again, we believe that they will continue to improve the operation of refineries, but now we have to wait until they solve this problem in Salina Cruz. And at this stage, I don't know. We have a meeting next week with them to discuss the ramp-up plan. So at this point, I would rather not give you an estimation. But the only thing I can tell you is that they part of their strategy and part of their business plan is to bring this refinery up to the 1.2 million barrels per day, which according to them is the economic capacity of the facilities. The technical capacity is 1.6, but if they run it at 1.6, they generate or they produce a lot of fuel oil, and then at this time with the prices of fuel oil, it's not economic to run at 1.6, so they're aiming to operate those plants at around 1.2, 1.3 million barrels per day.
Okay. Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
And we'll take our next question from Jose Vasquez with GBM. Please go ahead.
Hi, Pepe, Eduardo Hernan. I was wondering if you could explain more, give more detail on the extent of the impact at the EBITDA level for the stoppages on this, on both the scheduled ones and the ones that weren't scheduled for the quarter. Thank you.
Well, let me just explain to you very briefly. The 12 million referred to the cost over the guidance. The scheduled shutdowns or outages were already considered in the guidance cost, and the 12 million, the impact refers to the additional cost due to the unscheduled outages, and due also to the extension of some of the scheduled outages. As I explained, you know, unscheduled outages were the two outages in Cosoleacaque, and the extension was on the mostly on the Colombia Integrex asset.
Okay, perfect. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and we will take our next question from Veronica Renero with BNPP. Please go ahead.
And thank you for the call. Quick question, can you give us a sense of how much of your revenues are under fixed price contracts, if possible? And if so, what is the estimated tenor of those fixed price contracts? And my second question would be, in terms of the cogen plan, how many interested parties do you have right now, if that can be said? Thank you for the call.
Okay, well, with regards to your second question, let me just say there are several parties. It's not one and it's not two. It's more than that. Okay?
Okay.
There are several parties that are interested. With respect to your first question about the fixed price contract, are you referring to PET? I guess you're referring to PET sales, right?
Yes.
Okay, Veronica. Well, I would venture 20-30%. This is the number that I have up in my mind right now.
Okay, thank you for the call.
And there are no more questions.
Thank you. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call, and feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a nice day.
Ladies and gentlemen, this does conclude today's call. Thank you for your participation, and you may now disconnect.